Everyone, welcome back to the High Noon Love, Life, and Legacy Podcast. It's your boy and your girl, Araceli. How are you today?
Hello. Welcome, everyone. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. Where in the world are you? So our listeners know where you're coming from.
Yes. I'm in Argentina, Buenos Aires, and in the capital city.
There you go. And it is winter. It's summer.
It's summer. Summer.
I got that mixed up. We're in the winter, you guys are in the summer, which is mind-boggling to me for people who have never been down there. Don't understand.
Yeah.
So today's going to be a juicy subject. What are we talking about today, Araceli?
We're talking about where the women in High Noon in Ascend.
Yeah. Where are the women? And this is a question that we've been posing to each other as kind of like a riddle that we're trying to solve, is that we have a disproportionate amount of men in our programs, in our staff, everywhere in the High Noon world, for many different reasons that people could probably point out. But you started sharing some really important things that you were sharing with me about some really dark sides of women that I felt like only you, not Andrew or I, of all the years and experience we have with our wives, we would never dare to broach the subject of the shadows of women and what's keeping women from joining our programs in Ascend, because we know statistically that more than 50% of women that we have surveyed in our workshops do struggle with unwanted porn habits, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of curious as to where are they? You know, we're offering a service to them. We have groups just for women. And so I want to give you the microphone to kind of share your thoughts on this and, you know, where are they and how do we reach them, reach their hearts?
It's a very, very tough, difficult topic. And there's no like straight answer from the beginning, the get-go. We need to tell that. I wish we knew that answer completely so that we can definitely, have a solution to that. But yeah, it's very complicated to get a straight answer. But talking about this and considering this topic, these past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I've been breaking my brain around it. One of the reasons we were talking about when we were discussing this topic was, there's a very complicated connection between women and sexuality, you know, around history, you know, of humanity, even, how our worth is connected to our virginity, our sexuality, right? But this image of the Virgin Mary or an angel, a saint that women must have to be worthy of having some status, right? And that has been taken, you know, that has been a problem for a lot of women because we have been, how can I put this? That has been a disadvantage for us in a lot of ways, but also an advantage in certain other ways. So it's very tricky because it basically leaves us at odds within ourselves when we have this problem of porn masturbation, because it's very contradictory, this problem of having this porn masturbation issue at the same time having this image of virginity and purity of all women. You don't suspect women having any issues, right? We are very, you know, it's very normally accepted that men will have some sort of porn masturbation issue, but we don't think of women having something like that, right? And why? Why is that? And a lot of women take advantage of that reputation, let's say, and they will continue to have this problem and not acknowledge it and not take responsibility for it because we are seen as we don't have that issue, right? And then a lot of women will feel a lot of shame about this problem, right? And I know all men do too, but for some reason, again, because it's more acceptable for men to have some sort of connection with their sexuality more than women, it's more normal for men to talk about it, to even say that they have some problem, and yes, they feel shame, but it's so much darker or more, I won't say more shameful because the shame is the same, but it's so much harder for women to talk about it when there's shame around it. Because it's not acceptable for women to have any sort of connection with their virginity, sorry, with their sexuality, right? And so then again, that makes it even harder for women to, right, take responsibility and acknowledge that there is a problem that they should work on. So thinking about this, then this concept or this idea of women's sexuality and ideal for women's sexuality came to my mind, and the purpose for sexuality for women as well, right? So our purpose, one of the purpose attached to sexuality for women, is to become mothers, right? And it's a big part of it, and it's also a big part of why we should be virgins, right? It's a thought of women needing to be virgins because they should be mothers, and this, you know, the mother image is also very saint-like, very pure-like. And so this identity that we also have, right, that we are going to become mothers eventually, it's part of the femininity world, let's say, a feminine image. And part of our characteristics, let's say, as we're going to become mothers, we are going to give all of ourselves, right? Our bodies, our minds, our emotions, everything is going to be completely connected to our children eventually, right? And it's something that we have intrinsically. We don't have to do anything to do that, to become a mother. We just have to eventually have that relationship. But other than that, then the body is going to take care of that. We don't have to do nothing outside of ourselves to become mothers. And I realized that that is very connected to the way that we approach things as women, that we don't go outside of ourselves, or we shouldn't go outside of ourselves to feel worthy, right? To feel that we have intrinsic value, right? We already have it, and we don't feel like we need to do something more outside of that, right? And so then taking responsibility becomes a bit harder because it's very invisible how we take responsibility, right? It's not something very tangible that we do in order to become mothers, in order to become woman, right? We have the cycle, right? Menstruation, it happens naturally. So we don't have to do something very specific. And so it's very easy for us to just go about our life, right? And things that happening naturally, biologically, even inside of us, and we're not aware of these processes, you know, they're just happening. And so then taking responsibility implies that we need to be very conscious and very intentional about what we do, right? And doing something outside of ourselves, even, or inside, but it's something that we need to really decide. And it takes this going outside of ourselves in a way to do something. And it's very hard for women because, again, as our purpose eventually is becoming mothers, becoming women, then we haven't been, like, our focus in our raising is not really that. It's when we grow up, it's not that to take responsibility, to go outside of the world and do something, you know, because it's already within us. I don't know if it makes sense, but that's kind of what I've start thinking about in terms of why do women tend to not acknowledge certain issues or not take responsibility for certain things. And we feel like it's a bit of immaturity, a bit of we haven't been growing up or something like that, right? But then at the same time, it's very part of our nature because we weren't born to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike men, I would say,
gotcha.
That they need to do something, right?
Initiation.
To become men, the initiation.
Yeah.
There is not a clear, you know, point at which men would say, okay, I'm a man now,
yeah.
Right? Women, we do have that. We're girls until we have, you know, menstruation. We're able to have children and we're like, okay, people say I'm a woman now. I can get married now or something, right? And we're talking about very, like, biologically intrinsic nature stuff, right? there's a lot of things in the middle of it that make it even more complex. But just talking about the very like intrinsic nature of it, that really shape us, right? In our characteristics, in our personality. But we don't realize that.
Got it. Thank you for the lesson. I will not say anything because I don't. I will say on the man side, it's true. We don't have, in today's culture, we don't have a clear initiation that we usually have had throughout history. If you look at any culture, any tribe, any historical data points to the fact that men always have had some sort of initiation, a physical initiation, because we don't really have it an overt, obvious biological thing, right? So in some cultures, it would be like walkabouts in Australia, or taking a like the men would take a son or child, a boy, into the wilderness for a period of time, even physically hurt. It would physically hurt boys in some cultures, like give them a scar, so they'll remember on purpose, of course, deliberately, so they'll remember that they're not a boy anymore, they're a man, and they would take them back and give them a new name. They'll take them back to the family and give them a new name, right?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting take on it, right, for sure. So let's take this a little closer to home, if we can. If there's a sister listening to this, we're speaking to you, sister, and is struggling with sexual recovery and healing, as we all have to go through, understanding our sexuality. And may even be struggling with masturbation, porn, erotica, whatever it is. And we have a clear solution, right? That we do offer in our program, our Ascend program for women. So what is keeping that sister from saying, yes, like this is for me? What do you think?
Well, it can be shame. Shame is a big factor, and fear, right? And fear and shame, I would say, are the most important ones. But then there's also this other factor of this negative, I call it ego, the negative self-talk that we have, that we believe, and that convinces us that we are not worthy of love, that we are weak, that we can't change. And even convinces us sometimes that the problem that we have is not that big of a deal, right? So that it's not really that necessary to change it. We try to find that voice, let's say, this ego tries to find ways to keep this habit in place, because this way it can control us, right? And it can control our perception of ourselves, and our perception of ourselves is very important. If we feel like we're, you know, bad people, then and if we feel like we're weak, and if we feel like we are not loved and that we're not worthy of love, we don't feel like there's a point to change it, that we couldn't change. But if we ever were to change, people would still not accept us, right? And so this voice can go in many different like approaches, trying to convince ourselves to not take responsibility, to not admit that we have a problem, because the minute that we acknowledge it, the minute that we decide to change, it starts losing power, right, over us, right, and stop existing, right? And we have this natural tendency of believing the negative reality, the negative energy, and this negative self-talk. We tend to remember the most negative memories, right? The more negative experiences. And naturally, before, let's say, years ago, it was very necessary that we believed it, because we needed to protect ourselves, right? But today, right, we don't have to. And we don't realize that we are doing that, because it's very insidious, it's very invincible. So shame, fear, are the main key reasons women, and I would say everyone, right, but talking about women, don't come forward, right, and go and work on that. And connecting it a little bit to what I said before, it's like, you know, this virginity, reputation, right, that we have as women, the shame of losing that, the fear of losing that, right, the shame of acknowledging that I'm not that saint-like person that you thought of before, because we have that perception of ourselves. Even sometimes we believe that even though we have some issue, we still you know, can put forward this image of perfection, right? And it can still go on living, holding on to this habit, but maintaining this image of perfection even. And we feel like we can go on living like that, but we can't, right? And all of this is connected to not loving ourselves, right? Not feeling loved. Because if we did love ourselves, or if we acknowledge that we don't love ourselves, but if we did love ourselves, right, we wouldn't keep habits that are not good for us, right? But for some reason we don't, and we feel like we deserve this bad habit because we are not lovable, because we are not worthy. And we feel lonely and we feel disconnected, and this habit, all that they're doing is just keeping us in prison, you know, keeping us feeling more lonely, more disconnected, and more unlovable, and more, yeah, you know, all these bad things, because we believe that we deserve it, because we believe that we are not worthy of more.
Hey, just a quick interruption to tell you about the 40-Day High Noon Challenge. If you're trying to find a way to start living a high noon life today with no shadows and create a radiant blessing, then this simple challenge is for you. We will send you daily lessons from our team that will keep you motivated on your journey. It's totally free, guys, and you'll get constant content directly to you. Just sign up today at highnoon.org/challenge. That is highnoon.org/challenge. All right, back to the show.
I feel like that's a lot of what happened. And at some point when you're so deep in this addiction, we tend to then take out the meaning of that problem. Like, we stop believing that it's bad for us, right? And they call it, you know, we have talked about, Kainun has been talking about desensitization. I don't know if I pronounced it correctly, but, and then just to stop thinking that it's a bad thing, right? And we keep justifying reasons to maintain this habit because we don't believe it's bad for us, but it's the very thing that is keeping us feeling lonely, unhappy, unworthy.
So you have the unique perspective because you're mentoring women in our programs, in High Noon programs, and you're also facilitating for groups of women.
Yes.
And so I'm really curious to know, what is it that gets them to take action and be responsible to break down those barriers and actually face their demons and their shame? How do they go from afraid, fear, shadows to, okay, I'm going to do this?
It usually, the reason most people do it, but from what I've seen, usually it's because they want to get ready for partners, future blessing and blessing. And once they are faced with the possibility of starting a relationship, right, they realize, I can't have this. I can't hold this while I'm looking for a relationship, while I'm looking for my future family. And that's when most women start thinking about, what can I do better, or what should I change to be more prepared to become a better woman, let's say. And they start taking action. And that's the main reason they start.
Well, what do you think of that?
Well, I feel like that's very connected to our nature as women. We tend to be more relationship focused, right? It's our main, like, I wouldn't say purpose, but it's so intrinsic to us to have our focus in, like, our relationship. Parents brothers, sisters, friends, and then future husband. We are always aware of how our relationships are doing, and we want to make them better, and we want to feel connected. I feel like it makes sense. It makes sense, but it shouldn't be like the reason it starts so late, right? Right when they're about to start looking for a partner, it shouldn't be that, right? If you want to have a partner and you know that you are going to have a partner, you know, most people in our movement know it from the very, very early stages of their lives. Why are you waiting so much to start getting ready for it, right? That's my question. Like, what is making you wait so much?
It's not just women, by the way.
Yeah.
Large percentage of men that are in an Ascend program also are about to be in a relationship or in an engagement or already married. So I'm asking this question because is it really that helpful and healthy? You're right. It's like we're answering this question of what motivates people to work on this. And if the answer is, well, they're in a relationship and they're kind of forced to, then why not just wait? Why doesn't everyone just say, okay, well, I'll just work on this when I'm starting an engagement process, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely not healthy. Definitely not. I don't know if they're forced necessarily. I guess when you are considering somebody else, it just makes you go outside of ourselves and think of somebody else, and you realize how bad is it for that person as well as for you, right? But again, that links back to this idea that we don't love ourselves enough, right? And so then when we're starting to consider somebody else, only then we are like, okay, I have to do something about this, right? But we're doing about it because of this person and not for us, right? And that is why it's not healthy, because we are not doing it for us, when only ourselves should be reason enough to want to change, right? But yeah, most people tend to think about it, okay, once I'm with someone, they start thinking about that somebody else, that some other person, and they realize, okay, I should do something about this.
Well, what happens when somebody doesn't address the root issues as to why they continue to do a behavior that they don't agree with, doesn't agree with their values? And what happens if they don't address that and then bring that version of themselves into a relationship?
That's chaos. Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, the main problem is that you don't get outside of yourself, right? And for a relationship to work, you need to be able to think about that other person instead of you only, right? And so I don't want to be harsh, but it's a bit like a death sentence to start a relationship with someone and not addressing that issue, right?
What was your turning point where you decided to take responsibility for your sexual integrity?
Well, it's funny because partly was the matching and the blessing and, you know, future couple. But that was okay. So first reason and the main turning point, I would say, or the first turning point, I would say, it was because I didn't feel connected to myself. Like, I didn't feel like I loved myself. And I knew that that was the reason. I knew that I didn't like myself, that because I was having these two lives, right? And my parents, my family, everyone knew just this perfect image that I was putting forward. But then inside, I had this thing that I was hiding, right? And that I didn't like about myself, and that I didn't think anyone could like about myself, right? So then I wasn't being genuine, and I wasn't being loved genuinely, because nobody knew this issue that I had. And so everyone that loved me, I could only feel like they loved me up to this point, right? After the image that I was showing. And so I never felt completely loved. I couldn't accept the love completely. because I was hiding something that I knew was wrong, right? So I wanted to change that because I felt lonely, so lonely, and so ashamed because I was lying so much, basically. And I didn't feel connected, even though I knew I was loved. I didn't feel that love. I couldn't let it, you know, like fill me up, let's say. And yeah, that was the turning point. I needed to change that. And I knew that was one of the main things to change, because it wasn't letting me feel connected, basically. And then that was before I started even getting ready for a matching or anything. Then, yeah, that was the main turning point.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So what was the solution for you and for the women that you're mentoring?
Well, the solution was being honest about it, acknowledging it, and then deciding to do something about it. Once I decided that I really wanted to change that, and that I really wanted to be honest about who I was and feel good about myself, basically, right? And being able to love myself. Once I decided that I wanted that, at that time, hiding wasn't a possibility for me, so I couldn't really join a group. But once I was able to join a group, it was really the last step in my, I would say, one of the last steps that really helped me, like really push me farther in my recovery journey. Once I was able to join a group, because I felt really connected with the sisters in the group. We were all setting ourselves goals. We were being accountable to each other, and we were able to share deeper, you know, our deepest emotions, both negative and positive, and in our progress. We were sharing our progress together, and there was this connection between us, the four of us, that really helped me sustain that progress, because it was something that was what I wanted, to feel connected, right? And I felt like I was doing that because these people were seeing me fully. They knew everything, right? The good and the bad. So yeah, once I really decided, I took that responsibility of taking action, and that was one of the actions that really helped me the most.
So how did that result in feeling of, I guess you said, loving yourself more? Some people would call it self-compassion or feeling, whatever. How did that lead to that?
I guess the main thing that I struggled with was forgiving myself, or accepting that forgiveness, because my parents had forgiven me. I knew God forgives everyone, right? But I couldn't accept it. And so the thing that I struggled the most with, and that I was struggling with in that group, was forgiveness and accepting that forgiveness for myself. So that was something that I was really focusing on during that group. And so the result was being able to accept that forgiveness. And once I accepted that, I really felt that love, and from everyone. Like, it wasn't just for me. It was like I could feel loved from the sisters, from God, my parents. I could actually open up and say my heart to feeling that fully, because I wasn't hiding anything, and I didn't feel like I wasn't lying. So I didn't feel like there was something weird in those relationships. I felt like those relationships were holy and healthy once I was able to feel that forgiveness.
So it sounds like you were kind of able to see yourself more truthfully and accurately. Like you mentioned the ego, right? Which you could say is like the false self, or Satan, or whatever people call it, the dark shadows, whatever. And it's like you're able to see through that and stop listening to that ego.
Yeah.
And see yourself more truthfully and accurately.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, and I was also able to. So what I was struggling with in this not being able to accept love is that even though I knew of it, I couldn't feel it, right? Intellectually, I knew that was there. You know, God is there. God loves me. But intellectually, emotionally, or spiritually, however you want to call it, I couldn't feel it. I couldn't really feel that connection. And as you're saying, right, I was able to see myself truthfully, and I was able to, I guess, see myself from God's perspective, if we want to say it like that, and I was able to feel how much actually I was loved.
And sometimes we need people to remind us, right?
Yes,
sometimes
for sure.
We need a group.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also sometimes need consistency in pushing ourselves. I would say faith. We need faith. I think one of the key things that really helped me, the different perspective that I took was, you know, God is invisible, right? Invisible. And I can't see it, right? But I know it's there. So that's one way that we have faith. So I had to have faith that the love that God had for me was there, even if I couldn't feel it, right? And I had to push myself to, I guess, fight to feel it and like be consistent about creating this habit of letting myself feel loved, even if at the time I wasn't feeling it, right? It was all intellectual, let's say. But I had to do that, like, let's say this meditation prayer where I was just saying, I forgive myself, forgive myself. And it was only like repeating and repeating, even if I didn't feel it, right? Until eventually I was able to feel it. At some point, you feel like you're, yeah, this dumb thing that you're doing that doesn't make any sense, that it's really not working. And once you keep doing it, once you're doing all these things, eventually you realize that it's there, right? Because you stop listening to that other voice, that negative, you know, ego, fallen nature, whatever, right? So it's kind of like a balancing act where you stop believing that negative self-talk, but you also push yourself to believe this other, like, positive self-talk, if you want to call it that way.
I think this is an important conversation that we should keep going. I know it's a loaded word for people, self-love, self-compassion. At least when I hear it, I'm like, oh gosh, come on. But there's some truth to it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I would say that it's maybe principally speaking, we experience love through people, through God. That's how, like four realms of heart, that's how we experience love.
Yeah.
But we don't feel it. Like you're saying,
yeah,
we know it maybe intellectually because we're smart people. We know we're loved. God made me the trees and the dogs and the cats and all the stuff we were told in Sunday school, but we don't feel it, which if you think about it is like probably the biggest tragedy in humanity. Like think of all the things that we could solve if people just knew it, that there's a God that intimately loves me and is trying to love me through all the people in my life. As reminders. And I think we need that kind of reminder. And that's what we're trying to provide at High Noon is a reminder every day and every week, consistently, like you said, that you are worthy. It is possible. You can create the radiant blessing that you want, that you know you want in your life, and you are desperately loved. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we'll save that topic for next time. Self-love, self-compassion. We'll make a really clickbaity, triggery thumbnail, something like that.
Well, you know, we call it grace, right?
Yeah.
But that's what we're talking about.
Yes. It's the classic story of some, you know, a kid grows up, says, my parents never loved me, never loved me, never loved me. And then you have a sibling who grew up in the same family that says, my parents love me dearly. How is that possible?
Yeah.
Perception.
Yeah.
It's just perception. Yeah. And sometimes that person that doesn't feel loved, all of us, by the way, just need little reminders. And I think that's the name. That's the name of life. That's the way to live a fulfilling life, is just to be reminded that, not that like, oh, I'm loved, is that there is love in this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's worth fighting for, right?
Yeah.
There is goodness in this. There's good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. And that's a good feeling.
Better.
You know what I'm saying? That's a good, that's the best line in all cinema history. Samwise Gamgee. That there's good in this world, and it's worth fighting for. You know,
because
it connect, because then it suddenly it connects all of us to each other, and then we just feel connected to everything, and or puts in perspective what's really truly important in life, and we stop being distracted by the noise and distractions of stuff that really doesn't matter, but is taking up our attention anyways, right? Ego, the negative self-talk, the I can't, right? Anyways,
and you're like,
go ahead.
Sorry, just it might sound like too extreme, but everything that we do in this world, because of the society that we live in, if it takes away from understanding how important your family is, really makes no sense, right? Like careers, education, all these things, yes, they're important, they're fun, they're challenging, they make us grow, but if you know they're taking away from you feeling loved, for of you loving others, it's really not beneficial. And I know we have to work, but knowing that love exists, that's a purpose, right? Being family and loving. And we forget about it. Distractions, right? Netflix.
This is what we're going to talk about. This is what we were planning to talk about in our first episode. And then we, right? Priorities, distractions.
Yes, priorities.
The ultimate question that I want to pose everyone here to think about, why is it that we don't spend any, generally, time or attention on the things that are truly important to us?
Good question.
Good, freaking good question.
Yeah.
Everyone just like list out, what is the number one, number two, most important thing in your life? And how many times have you thought about, how can I accomplish those priorities today? And that's the idea of the North Star. And we have this whole process in our programs to help people create a North Star goal and how to achieve it and how to work on it day by day, so that we can shift our focus and priority to what's really important. And then naturally, when the number one actually becomes number one, the other stuff kind of just becomes background noise because we're focused. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like everything just kind of fits in place and we feel more peace and more less stress because we know what's, we're clear about what's important to us. You know?
Yeah. Sure.
You want to wrap up with some words to our sisters listening or brothers?
I guess just want to say, take that step that you're fearing, that you're avoiding. That's scary, because that usually is the thing that we should be going toward.
That's good.
That's it.
All right, everyone.
You're loved.
You are loved. Very nice. All right, Arsene. Thank you very much. Bye. God bless you
Thank
all.
You.
We love you. Hey, did you know that our team wants to do more events? Well, if you want to bring the High Noon message to your community or group, then let us know and we'll try to work something out. There's a simple application that you can fill out right now at highnoon.org/invite, and one of our team members will get back to you to see what's possible. That's highnoon.org/invite. All right, see you in the next episode.